All right.
We are 12. And last week, we looked at the woman with the child. And I propose, it's been around for well over 100 years. And in fact, among people who read the Bible the same way I do, that used to be pretty much the default position, and it was a really well-known one. And then for some reason, it just kind of fell out of favor, fell out of interest. Nobody really knows why, but anyways, that's what happened. And so now we've met three of these characters, three of these important characters that are here in chapter 12. We've met the woman, we've met the child, and we've met the dragon. And knowing who these are is going to help us to understand, but it's a complicated section. I think, Connie, I think you said, no, you weren't really hard. You, something to the effect of like knowing when this happened. You're right, it does, and there are, it definitely is different from the rest of Revelation. Well, picking up where we left off in verse 7, I think what we'll do is let's read to the end of the chapter. Just kind of get as far as we get. So starting in verse 7, and there became a war in the heaven, and Michael and his angels warred with the dragon, and the dragon warred and his angels, and he was not strong enough, neither was their place found still in the heaven. And the great dragon, the from the beginning serpent, the one called devil and the Satan, the one deceiving the whole house of the world, was cast into the earth, and his angels with him were cast. And I heard a great voice in the heaven saying, now becomes the salvation and the ability and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ, because the accuser of our conquered him through the blood of not loved their souls until death. Through this be gladdened. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil comes down to you, having great passion he has. And then I saw the beauty of the woman which gave birth to the male, and the two wings of the great eagle, where she would be fed there an appointed time, and appointed times, and half an appointed time from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast water like a river out of his mouth before the woman, so that she should be made river borne away. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was made wrathful upon the woman, and passed away to make a war with the remaining of her seed, the ones. Okay, so we come here again, somebody's way of interpreting the scriptures. Everybody probably, all of you guys are probably familiar with St. Michael, with being the one who cast out the dragon. In Catholic theology, there are a lot of St. Michael's churches. There are a lot of Catholics, including me when I was younger, who had the medal of St. Michael. And it's very well known, and there is a belief in Catholic theology, and in fact in a lot of theology, that what happened here, that Satan being cast out of, Satan initially fell out of, other people will place this at different places in history. But for my part, I think that, well, you know what, we'll get to my part later. So before we dive in, and so looking at that, the fall of Satan being cast out of heaven, you have a couple different interpretations, but the main two are that this happened way back in the past when Satan first sinned, and the other major interpretation is this has not yet happened, this is yet to come. And there are people that believe stuff in the middle, but there's always, I mean, if you can imagine some weirdo somewhere that believes it, I'm not kidding, there's some, every once in a while I get somebody who sends me an email who wants me to start teaching their interpretation of Revelation. If you can imagine it, there's somebody who believes it. Anyways, what stands out to you guys before we dive into my thoughts on this and studying the text? What stands out to you guys? What do you the woman in the church? So I spent probably a good part of last week the Bible study. So if you want a really longer explanation, I would recommend going on the website and listening to a fuller description of that, but I'll give you the fast version, the fast version. So the woman here is clearly Israel. I don't think that there's really much interpretation. There are some Catholic theologians who say the woman is the church, but the reference to the sun, the moon, and the crown of 12 stars, really so what we have is we have the woman, she's pregnant, she's Israel. Now, there are two interpretations that I think can actually make sense. One, and this is the predominant one, this is what most people believe, is that the child that the woman gives birth to is Jesus. And there are some decent reasons to believe that this is Jesus. The other interpretation is that it's the church. Now, why would you believe that this is Jesus? So, he's got an enemy, Satan is his enemy. Okay, well, but that one cuts both ways because Satan is the enemy of the church too. So, that doesn't really make sense. Well, Satan attacked Jesus, wanted to kill Jesus when he was just a baby, you know, and was ready to, not really sure that would make sense. So that could go both ways. Now, we look at the child was given birth, a male son, singular, a male son. That's a strong case right there because we mentioned last week that in Isaiah 60-something, that term, a male son, so that's a really strong case. And then we see that he is, this male son, is about to shepherd the nations with a rod of iron. And that is in Psalm 2, a reference to Jesus, the Messiah. But this is where we need to consider, well, let's look at Revelation. Earlier in chapter, talk about how the church, those who overcome, are going to shepherd the nations with a rod of iron. So the church in, I forget what, 226? Okay, so in 226, those in the church, Christians in the church, Jesus says, if you are an overcomer, you will be one of those who shepherds the nations with a rod of iron. So in Revelation, it's not Jesus that this is referring to, but the church. And then we'll see later that same passage from Psalm 2 is used again to refer to the church. So now we've got an issue where it's like, well, Psalm 2, it's referring to Jesus. But two places in Revelation, that passage is referring to Jesus. So it could be, is referring to the church. So it could be referring to Jesus. But then we get this next part, that the child was snatched away to God and to his throne. So two things worth noting about that. One, harpazo is the verb that we see in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, where it talks about the rapture of the church, that those who are alive shall be snatched up, they'll be raptured up, and they'll meet the Lord in the air, and so the dead in Christ shall rise first. You know the passage. That verse, that verb, it's the verb harpazo, is never Paul, two times it's used referred to Paul. One time Paul uses it to talk about the rapture of the church, and one other after Philip, and then Luke, and then Philip was just taken away. He was harpazo. Well, that it's the same word. And it means to be taken away from a situation by an outside force. That's not at all how, it's a completely different description. The other thing is that the male child, the word to his throne, that expression to, that never refers to Jesus. Jesus is described as being in the throne or for the throne or going near the throne in Revelation. He's always in the throne or on the throne. It's never, or upon. When we look at that, it makes a lot of sense. Why does it also make sense for it to be the church? Okay, well, so this thing is taken out of heaven, or this whatever this is, if this is Jesus or if it's church, is taken to heaven. And then verse 6 says, after this happened, the woman fled into the desert where she has a place prepared from God so that he should nourish her for 1260 days. But this does fit perfectly well with the idea that after the church is raptured, that Israel will have a place roughly 3.5 years. And that number 1260, that's not exactly the same, but it's really 1290, or Daniel mentions 1290 days. So it would make perfect sense if the woman, the male child is snatched away, and then something happens that causes the woman to flee into the desert. Well, what would that thing be that causes the woman to flee into the desert? Well, the church is raptured. Israel, as a nation, makes peace with Antichrist, and that peace lasts for about 3.5 years. Well, what happens to cause the war? Well, we go to the end of chapter 11, and what happens? There's a lightning and thunder, and there's an earthquake in Jerusalem, and a tenth of the city is destroyed. 7,000 people die, and it says that in Jerusalem, that people gave glory to the God of heaven. I believe, and there are other reasons, I think you were here when we talked about this, there are reasons to believe, I think compelling reasons, that is where all is putting all this together. I know that this is, I'm giving you a lightning round here, so this is a lot to take in. This is like 3 or 4 weeks of this study just being slammed together. So what we see is something happens to the woman where the woman is taken away from world events for a 3.5 year period and is specially protected by God. That has not happened in the past. The only thing in the Bible that makes sense of that is a war, the war of Gog and Magog, which is also the war of Antichrist against Israel, where Israel is in the great, and that you could look at Mark, where they talk about, like, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken about in Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, flee into the desert. Well, that's still future. That's when a false sacrifice is offered on the altar. And it may be that there was a false sacrifice by Antichrist on that altar. Prophet, don't need to get into all that. But when we try to fit all the pieces into the puzzle, I'm not saying that every piece fits perfectly because we don't know. But the pieces fit together best when we understand that what happens in the middle of chapter 11, all of Israel has become a Christian at that point. That has caused Antichrist to turn against Israel and wants to hurt Israel. This has happened after the rapture, about 3.5 years after the rapture. Israel is now besieged, and a huge number of Israelites flee into the mountains where they can hide out and try to hide out from the mountains. And Satan tries to attack them, but he's thwarted in his attempts to destroy them in their flight. And then there's a prolonged war that takes place. But we know from other passages in the Bible, I think Daniel talks about this, where he's getting ready to attack, but then rumors from the north have to draw him away. So he's not, so all that happens. I know that was extremely fast, and that was, like I said, that was like distilling 4 weeks of information and trying to give it to you all at once. But hey, that was about as good as I could do summarizing, but it gets complicated. And this is why people love charts. This is why people really like charts, and like they can lay out, hey, these are the reasons why we believe this. This is where the timeline fits. And so I'll look around and try to find some charts. I think we're at the point in Revelation where having some charts, pay any fees. But anyway, so that happens. Other thoughts on what we have in verses 7 through the end of chapter. Yeah, so we have, when we go back to chapter 11, it's very similar, right? So we have really similar language where the nowness, the immediacy, the full there, and it's really interesting because, again, we have a lot of revelation left. But this one actually gives us an explanation. Now, in chapter 11, I said the only thing that makes sense of verse 15, the only thing that explains how the kingdom of the world can already be, the only thing in chapter 11 that is unique, that is new, that is different from anything else we've seen in history or in the book of Revelation, we know there are people who live in Jerusalem, and we know from other passages in the Bible, like I said, particularly Romans, where it says all Israel will be saved, we know that all Israel is going to be saved. So it makes sense to put it here because that's the only thing that would be significant enough to warrant people saying the kingdom has now become Christ's kingdom when there's still, 11, like 8-9 chapters left before Jesus actually, that seems a little premature. Like, Jesus, you're not actually coming for 3.5 years to sit on the throne. But Jesus says, no, it's done. The world has now become my kingdom. Satan's kingdom is broken. Why? Because Israel has turned. Because the people of God are now God's people. And so that's happened. And so we see similar language to this. And notice, again, there's something significant here. Because what's happened? There's this 3.5 year period is left. It's midway through the tribulation, because we know the tribulation is a 7 year period. That's very clear in Daniel. And then there's a war in heaven. Why is there a war in heaven 3.5 years into the tribulation? That seems rather odd. If it's a tribulation, why didn't God cast Satan out at the beginning, at the rapture of the church? Or I believe the church is raptured then, but why didn't God cast Satan out earlier? That doesn't seem to make sense. Something significant has to have happened to cause Satan to be cast out in the middle of the tribulation. Because otherwise it would make sense. You would say, well, one, why wasn't Satan cast out in the very beginning? Well, he wasn't. So Satan isn't cast out because he tempts people. And Satan isn't cast out because he's evil. Something has changed to cause Satan to be cast out of heaven. Well, what's the only thing that's changed? It's, at least in my interpretation, the way, I appreciate that, Deanne, because that is, that, yeah, I think that's a really strong parallel there. I translated that word ability. I think your Bibles, if you have your Bibles open, it probably says the power. Now comes the salvation and the power. It's the word dunamis, and every Greek scholar in the world would get mad at me for saying this, but the word dunamis is where we get the word dynamite. Dynamite came from the word dunamis because it means power. It means ability, strength, like the verb to be able to. Sometimes it means ability, and in fact, a lot of, but other times it means power.
Raw.
You get my, yeah. Yeah, and we can go back. We can go back a verse. Who's being conquered? The accuser of our brethren. And who conquered him? Well, angels cast him out. But that's not. But that would not make sense grammatically. Yeah. It would certainly appear. If you want to make sense of the grammar, it would certainly make sense that it would be the believers who conquered him. And again, look at that word conquered. The conquered here does not refer to the casting out of Satan. The conquering is a reference back to the beginning. What did we have in the beginning? Over and over and over, we had seven times in chapters 2 and 3 of Revelation, we saw, to him who conquers, to him who conquers, to him who conquers, to him who conquers, or to the one conquered. So what are we seeing? What are we seeing? We're seeing a repetition of the words. So the brethren, the those who were being accused, they have conquered Satan. How? Through the blood of the Lamb and through the word of their testimony. And so it would certainly seem that here in chapter 11, despite the fact that there is no church, because I believe there was a rapture, but there are people who are believers in the world. Well, who are these believers? Well, we've already met them. We've met the 144,000 from the 12 tribes of Israel. That 144,000, I believe, has now become the entire nation. But we've also seen a great multitude of Gentiles. And they have conquered Satan. And so I think that what we see, and I'm just throwing this out just to say it, but in the beginning of Revelation, we see these statements to the church of the one who conquers, you'll receive these blessings. And that's a word to the church. But even when the church isn't there, I feel like this is, they conquer by the blood of the Lamb. They will conquer in the same way that we conquer. We conquer through the blood of Christ. They'll conquer through the blood of Christ. And what else didn't they do? They didn't love their souls unto death. So a lot of these were probably martyrs. A lot of the people that are talking about that had conquered, they died for this. And then it says, through this, or on account of this, on account of the fact that there are believers who have conquered the accuser of the brethren. So I'm trying to use a lot of these terms, throwing these back together. Verse 12, through this be gladdened, or on account of this, or for this reason, I want you to be happy. The heavens and the ones living in the heavens should be happy. Why should the heavens and the ones living in the heavens be happy? Because believers have conquered Satan by faith in Jesus, by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony, and because they were willing to die for Jesus. That's what makes them happy. So we've got a contrast. So verse 12 says, be happy, be glad, heavens and the ones tending in them. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil comes down to you, having great passion, knowing that he has that few appointed time or a little time he's got. He's only got a little time. So we've got a contrast. We've got a parallelism. And Hebrew thinkers love parallelisms. So heaven and those who are in heaven are supposed to be really, really happy. Why? Because they've overcome Satan. They were probably, the majority of them had died because they didn't love their souls unto death. They were willing to resist Satan. And even though Satan was up in heaven accusing them and accusing people on earth day and night, they overcame him. They overcame the accusations of Satan. How did they overcome the accusations of Satan? The same way anybody overcomes the accusations of Satan, through the blood of Christ, because the blood of Christ is the only thing that can atone for sin. But the earth and the sea, on the other hand, woe. I think it includes them. I think that this is, I'll be honest, I don't know exactly what to do with this because it's hard for me to know exactly who is intended here. I think that the statement to be happy, to rejoice heaven, I think that's referring to saints that have either died as martyrs or died in a normal way and been raptured, and then those who've died during the tribulation. So I think it's only the dead saints. They're able to rejoice because they have conquered. In Christian theology, at least in the theology of Revelation, you haven't conquered until you're dead. Or until Jesus has, like, Jesus has raptured you up, or Jesus in chapter... The race is not finished until it's over. So I would say that it's referring to those who are in heaven only, but that would include people who've died during the tribulation period. But this is probably not referring to those who are believers who are still alive on earth. They woe to them, because Satan's coming down, and why is he angry? Well, because he knows he only has a little time left. So there are people who say, well, Satan doesn't know the future, only God knows the future. Well, he knows he only has a little bit of time. Like, he obviously knows some of the future. Other thoughts, other questions? I know we kind of went a little out of order, just because we got excited about that song there. But other questions or comments? And if not, then we'll actually go back to verse 7 and start over, and then we'll skip that part. Okay, verse 7, we see that there was a war in heaven. War in heaven is an interesting topic. How many of you guys have read? I've never read the whole thing. I've read large sections of it. I got it for Christmas, so I'm rereading the beginning, which I've read, but I think I've read the whole thing. I don't think I have. But anyways, I'm rereading it, and of course, Paradise Lost is all about, and in the war in heaven, again, we talked about this at the very beginning. It's a well-known theme of, you know, Satan, being the dragon being stomped on by Michael the archangel, who's, you know, stabbing it with a spear, who's hacking his head off with a sword or something, and there's this idea that this is what happened. Milton, a lot of theology is built on the idea that this already, that it's really hard. The only way you can read this in the context and have it make sense is if you have a system of reading Revelation where none of it is future. Like, you have to just say, none of this is in the future. These are all allegories, these are all metaphors, and none of the advantage of the system of interpretation I'm teaching from is you can pin me down. And there are things that I can't answer. There are problems that are with every system of interpretation. But with mine, you can pin me down and you can say, Luke, what does this word mean and how does this fit into the timeline? And I can give you a definite answer and you can prove me wrong. You can find problems with my system. When all you say is, well, it's a symbol. Well, there's no pinning somebody down. You can't falsify anything because they'll just wiggle around and say, well, you know, it means this. And no, like, give me a system that you can turn the screws on and hold it accountable to. And that's why the system of interpretation I'm using, dispensationalism, premillennial interpretation, futurist interpretation, that's why it's always appealed to me. You can test it. You can put, well, I won't because I'm going to keep talking, but Michael and his angels warred with the dragon. So there's a war in heaven, and Michael and his angels warred with the dragon, and the dragon warred and his angels. Okay, so there's a war, and both sides are described as having angels. And I think that it makes the most sense to assume that these are all angelic beings, like the species of creature that are angelic. They're not humans. They're stronger and more powerful than humans. And there's a war in heaven. And so what's happening in heaven is now mirroring what's happening on earth, which is interesting. But Michael and his angels warred with the dragon. Now, here in footnote 53, I have a rather long and kind of technical grammatical footnote. Basically, let me give you a really short version of this. No one can translate this into English, and there's only one other place where John, in John chapter 13:19, but he uses a different verb. It's not the verb to make war. There's one place, one. Person, I don't know if I came up with it or if it was somebody else, but there was somebody who found in a rare translation of the Old Testament, in Daniel 10 verse 20, Michael the archangel is saying that he's going to go and make war against the prince of Persia. It's the same verb, and it's the same way that the same really rare untranslatable verb form is used. And so the idea is, actually, maybe what John is doing is John is making a direct reference to Daniel chapter 10, verse 20. Because if you remember, you know, he talks about the prince of Persia, and what does Michael say? Michael the archangel tells Daniel, hey, as soon as you prayed, I was sent. but I was detained by the prince of Persia. I had to fight against him for an extended period of time. And so, anyways, so we get that. I think it's probably an allusion to that, but who knows? Anyways, so they're having war in heaven, and Satan is not strong enough for him, and there's no place found for him in heaven yet. So Satan makes war, and it sounds like it was Satan that instigated the war, that Satan initiates the war. It might be the other way, but he had no more place in heaven. He was no longer fit there. And then we get this description, and the great dragon, oh, wait a minute, we've already had a description of the dragon. We had the dragon up there. So now, if you had any questions, now you know for sure who the dragon is. And the ancient serpent, I think, I have the from the beginning serpent. You probably, your Bible probably has something that means ancient. It's a really interesting Greek word. But he's a serpent. And then, oh, and again, he's called the devil, or he's called devil and the Satan. Satan is Hebrew. A lot of people, in fact, Han, which means the adversary or the one who opposes. And he's Satan. And then we know who else he is. Another description. He's the one deceiving the whole house of the world, the whole world. And he was cast into the earth, and his angels with him were cast. And I heard a great voice saying, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So after Satan is cast down to the earth, what happens? We get this prayer. We get this song of praise about what's happened. Everything in this song of praise happens after Jesus has died. Everything in this seems to have happened. It has to at least happen after Jesus has died, and it has to happen when Satan's time is short. So whenever this happens, even if you completely disagree with me, Satan has to be cast down at some point between the resurrection of Jesus and the still future. This cannot be back in the beginning, because verses 10 through 12 tell us it can't be, because they conquer by the blood of the Lamb. They conquer by the testimony of the blood of the Lamb. So they can't be people who are preaching the blood of the Lamb, because nobody was preaching the blood of the Lamb, because the blood of the Lamb hadn't been shed. Now, you can try to wiggle out of it. Yeah, they talk about Satan and his rebellion. There's no description of war. So war is unique to this. We also have another passage, and this is this isn't a perfect explanation, but who's the big bad God go down to hell to talk to Satan? No, Satan and his angels, or I'm sorry, God and his angels are having a conversation, and Satan just like wanders up and is like, hey guys, what's going on? And then the whole thing starts from there. So it's weird, but again, this can't be in the beginning. This cannot be before humanity has come. Why can't it be? Because look at verse 10. Now comes all these stuff. Because the accuser of our brothers is cast, the one accusing them before God day and night. If he's accusing them before God day and night, and he is now cast out, so he was accusing them day and night before he was cast out. What has to happen for him to be accusing the brothers day and night before he's cast out? There have to be people for him to accuse. If he's cast out, like Milton says, and like a lot of people believe, before humanity is created, what has to happen? He has to have somebody to accuse. It's logic. You can hold the Bible, you can turn the screws on the Bible and say, does this make sense? Does somebody's interpretation make sense? No. The idea that Satan fell way, way back when, I know it's the popular idea. I know that this is what everybody gets taught. I know that it's in Milton. I know that Dante probably talks about it, and it's just all part of our cultural imagination, but it doesn't hold up to scrutiny. The New Testament, the book of Revelation says, no, right now, I believe right now, Satan is in heaven. Satan isn't in the pit of hell. Satan's in heaven, and what's he doing? He's pointing his finger at me and you and saying, hey, did you see what so-and-so did? And how do we conquer? It could be. I mean, it could. No. That's a really good thought, because I think I've heard somebody pose that before, that Satan was cast out, but he was still allowed access to heaven. I mean, maybe. I wouldn't say that that doesn't make sense, but maybe that this casting out is a final casting out. It could be, you know, that now he's thrown out and he's locked out, and before he was just thrown out and, you know, take that. I don't know. It could be. No. I mean, there's nothing in here to refute that. And It would certainly seem that if Satan were doing really bad things, that God would at least punish him in some way. Again, maybe I'm missing stuff, but it would certainly cast out, and he's cast out for good. So I think that that's a completely reasonable interpretation. I can't prove that it happened, and that's a really fine line to walk in Bible teaching and in our study of the Bible. Is there are a lot of things that make good sense that you can't prove, and so you believe them, and there are some things that you can't prove, and so I won't teach it because I'm like, I like that, makes a lot of sense, but I can't prove it. And it's a fine line we all walk, but we all believe if it makes sense to you and you believe that it answers the questions the best, if there's nothing to we get to verse 13. And the dragon was cast into the earth, and he persecuted the woman which gave birth to the male. So after Satan is cast out of the earth, he persecutes the woman that gives birth to the male. Okay, again, not trying to be a jerk, but if Satan fell in the beginning, how can he persecute the woman that gives birth to the male? Even if the woman is Mary and the male is Jesus, it has to happen at that point. He has nobody, he's cast out, and then he persecutes her then. It doesn't make great sense. Okay, so the two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman so that she should fly into the desert, into her place where she should be fed there an appointed time and an appointed times and half an appointed time from the face of the serpent. Okay, so something happens and Israel is trying to get away. Why are they trying to get away? Probably because Antichrist, who is this great world ruler, has determined that he is going to make war. Probably because a huge number of Israelites realize after they become Christians that they need to take the gospel seriously. What do? They read the Gospels and they see there's an abomination of desolation and they're told, get out. You see the abomination of the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place where it does not belong. What are you supposed to do? Get out. Don't turn back to get stuff. Leave. Leave now. Flee to the mountains. And what do? They flee to the mountains. I think that's reasonable. I think it's perfectly reasonable to say these people become believers, they take the Bible seriously, and then they obey it when they see something. And they're sent there to be there how long? Time, times, and half a time. And I translated this as appointed time. There are two Greek words for time, at least two. There's the word chronos or chronos, where we get chronology, or the old time word for watches, they used to call them chronometers. Just a really snobby way to talk, you know, that we should all be a little pretentious and we should drink our tea with our pinkies up. You know, I think we should do that. But there are two words. There's chronos, which means time. If you know your Greek mythology, Chronos was the father of Zeus and some of the other gods. And then there's Kairos or Kairos. Now, some of you guys might be familiar with Kairos prison ministry. So Chronos just means time, like just time in general. Kairos means a specific time, a point in time, that typically a point in time that's been set beforehand. So you wouldn't say, hey, in Greek, you would say, hey, what time, what chronos am I going to meet you for dinner? You would say, what kairos? Because it's a set time. So you're not asking, I'm trying to think of a good version. Like you wouldn't say, you'd say in English, like, what time am I supposed to meet you for supper? You wouldn't say, what history do I meet you for supper? Well, history is also time, right? But that's not really how we use the word. So Greek has these differences. And so they're saying she's going to go for appointed time. So 3.5 years that are appointed. 3.5 years that are specially set aside by God. They have a purpose. It's not just arbitrary time that they're going to be there. So they're going to be there in the desert. And the serpent cast water like a river out of his mouth before the woman so that she should be river-borne away, is how I translate it. The word means swept away by river. It's funny that the Greeks actually have a word for, it's not just drowning, it's when you drown in a river that's flooding. I don't think English has a word, maybe German has a word for that, but English doesn't have a word for that, unless, we don't have a word for that that I know of. And people say, and the earth helped the woman and opened its mouth and drank up the river that the dragon cast out of his. You got questions, I'm sure, which is, what on earth does it mean that the dragon vomits the water out and the water is the water? I have no idea. I have no clue, and I am not even going to attempt to give an answer to this because I have no, any answer I give is going to be bad. So this is one of those places where I readily admit I do not have any clue, and I am not even going to attempt. This is, now, if I were a crazy person, I could, you know, throw it out there. The only answer I might give that might make some sense is the river in Israel is called the Jordan, and Jordan means to go down. Yardan in Hebrew means to go down, and it often, maybe there's a really obvious answer that I'm not aware of, and that I just haven't looked through enough commentaries to find the answer. I have no clue. I don't think it's an actual river. I'll just put it that way. I don't think that Satan himself is actually vomiting a literal river out of his mouth to drown the nation of Israel, especially if the nation of Israel has eagle's wings, like trying to eagles. I don't know if any of you guys have ever killed eagles, but I have not, so I can only guess, but I'm just saying that I don't think that way makes a whole lot of sense. But the earth drinks it up, and they're safe. And then the dragon was made wrathful upon the woman and passed away to make a war with the remaining of her seed. So here is a problem, I will admit, with my system of interpretation. This is a potential problem. So the dragon is made wrathful with the woman. Who's the woman? The woman's, and then he goes away to make a war with the remaining of her seed, the ones keeping the commandments and having a testimony of Jesus. Okay. If Israel has all been, then Israel at this point, if the church is her male son, and the church is gone, then the remaining of her seed presumably would also be Israelites. But the Israelites are all believers, and so it seems like we've got the same people being referenced with two different words. Now, it could be that the remaining of her seed could be Israelites that are not living in the land, that are not actually living there, because we have a great Jewish diaspora. There are millions of Jews in America. There are Jews in Russia and Poland and Eastern Europe. There are Jews all over the world. So maybe what this means, and this would be my best guess, but it's not perfect and there are problems with it, is that maybe Antichrist creates a massive, that would be my best guess, but I don't really know. That's just me offering a guess. Again, I want to be totally upfront and honest. I think that my interpretation gives the most answers to the most questions that can withstand the most scrutiny. But that doesn't mean that somebody who tells you that they have a system of biblical interpretation that answers every question and doesn't have any problems, they're either liars or they're fools. Either way, don't listen to them because they're either liars or they're fools. And they're not worth listening to because every system has problems. You look for what has the best answers. It's the same way you vote, right? I'm sure you guys all vote, and who do you vote for? Do you vote for a perfect candidate? No. You vote for the best of the crappy options we have. You pick the least crappy option. And some of us are in politics, so maybe sometimes it's a sterling, wonderful example, and you have a glorious option. But most of the time, you have to theology, honestly. That's just me being honest with you. Do you guys have other questions or comments or critiques tonight? Because I'm done. That's what I wanted to cover.